Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
You are listening to Taking Back Monday. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And Tim Townsend is joining you today.
And we are going to get right into it. Tim, tell us, what is your origin story?
I think for me, Alyssa, it was there was a moment in time that really defined, especially from a work point of view and working with teams, a defining moment, you might say. I'd been working in corporate for a period of time. I was in a senior management role. And I always remember sitting in a room, there was about 9 or 10 of us there, all in a similar role. And we were arguing quite vehemently about some things that needed to happen to pick up the organization and carry it forward. And I'll never forget a moment in time where I'd been arguing a particular point and saying, we really need to get behind this. It's for the good of the team. And the person sitting on my left, I remember it like it was yesterday, looked at me and said, well, I can't support that. And I said, Warren, why would you not support it? And he said, well, it's not part of my KPIs. And it was like a realization moment where I looked at this person basically like they'd just grown a second head. I was so shocked to hear those words that the common goal wasn't that relevant to that person. And I looked down the table and realized in that room there was more of him than there was of me. That the people that were self-serving outnumbered those that actually cared for the common cause. And so for me, Alyssa, that was in many ways an origin moment, which if you fast forward to today, running practices, running business, which is very focused on personal service in a depersonalizing world. You know, it's amazing the world we're living in today. I absolutely love technology. The fact that you're sitting on the other side of the world as I'm sitting here at 5 o'clock in the morning and we're having this conversation is just fabulous that we can do this. However, there's a real loss for some people, for a lot of people, of the personalization of the world that we live in as well.
I resonate with your story so much. I've spent most of my career in startups and small teams where when you're in a startup, you're very like core goal focused, right? For the most part, we don't have KPIs figured out yet. We don't have personal incentive plans figured out yet. We are just trying to figure out how do we even get to tomorrow, let alone the 10-year goal that we've, you know, written up on the whiteboard. And so when our company, you know, we built that for like 7 or 8 years, we eventually got acquired. And I started doing more consulting for really big corporations, like enterprise level corporations, you know, logos you've heard of. Yep. And all of a sudden I discovered that there was an entire political landscape inside of these companies that I wasn't equipped to navigate in. And I would accidentally stumble into someone's territory without realizing it. And of course, my goal is always the best outcome of the project because I was an outside consultant. I really don't benefit from any of the politics. I only benefit from the project getting done so that I can, you know, invoice for my services. But some of the internal people, I accidentally ended up in a situation where someone wanted to intentionally slow down my work because they were getting the project taken away from them and they didn't want anyone to know that it was actually doable because her thing was, this is too hard. It's not doable. It can't be done. If I can't do it, nobody can. And then I was going to be given it. And she wanted to make sure that that message carried through. It wasn't doable. It was too hard. It can't be done. And me coming in to do it threatened that persona or that story she had told everyone. And that ended up being a threat to her and her positioning inside the company.
I think that's an interesting word there, Alyssa, threat. Because I think what I witnessed there in that room and felt and understood the how it's such a force that can hold things back is a common denominator of large groups of people. The larger the group gets, the more siloed our mentality becomes. And, you know, it's fight or flight. You know, there's a lot of people who feel threatened in that situation of the large group, and maybe wisely so, who then become more and more internally focused. But the more internally focused that we become, the less effective we are. It's one of the reasons I really admire those people that can take large groups, large organizations, and maintain a positive and creative culture at the same time. But much like you say, you know, I mean, 13 years ago, we established Townsend Cobain as a wealth advice practice. And my business partner and I had worked together, Rod Cobain had worked together for 27 years, longer than he's been married, I point out to him regularly, just trying to fight my way into the hierarchy of relationships in our lives. But the interesting point was that it was an opportunity. Well, one of the things we used to say to each other, having worked through corporates and different structures and both feeling frustrated by that element, was we were never going to work with someone we had to tolerate again, which just sounds a terrible thing in a way, but it's been joyous to be a small team, focused, keeping everybody focused on the same thing. And I think, a lot of that comes down to leadership, an absolute belief that through others' success, I will succeed. A commitment to helping them find their best, and through that, actually achieving and extracting what I need to classify myself as success.
So in college, I studied psychology, particularly social psychology, because that was a thing that just absolutely satisfied that urge to understand how people make decisions and how people operate. I eventually went into marketing because I didn't want to be a psychologist or a therapist. Went into marketing, took all that psychology to help, you know, tell stories of products and brands. And one of the concepts that we learned about in social psychology is called social loafing, which I thought was really fascinating.
Yeah.
And the analogy that they used is, and I'm not sure if you have this in Australia, but there's a game that you play in elementary school called tug of war. So there's 10 people on each side. You each have a rope and you're all pulling on the rope.
Yep.
Okay. And what they discovered through a series of experiments is that the more people you had on your side of the rope, the less you pulled individually. And the idea that the bigger your group, the less you contribute individually. And so when it was like one versus one, people were giving their max pulls. They were giving their all because they were the only ones there that could make it happen. And even when it became, you know, three or four, it's not even that it went to, you know, okay, we have four people now, so we're each going to give 25%. It was actually closer to like 15%. So all of a sudden, simply adding three more people to your team turns your pull, how much effort you were exerting, like didn't just cut it into fourths, cut it way down into fifths. And so I think it's an interesting idea at work that when we add more people, when we add individuals, we create this cover of there's other people who will pick up the slack. So I don't have to go quite as hard. I don't have to be quite as good. I don't have to be quite as on top of it. But I don't want anybody to know, because that was the other part of the experiment. Nobody would cop to pulling less. They would just say, oh, I pulled exactly the same. But in reality, we know through science that they didn't. And so how do we create teams that pull their weight the entire time, that don't social loaf and give us 15 or 20% when they used to give 100, and do it in a way that everybody feels accountability and that they understand where we're going as a team and how their individual contributions and their individual KPIs build to that larger team vision?
It's an interesting, because I think, you know, we talk about KPIs and things like that, which are all measures that we create as we desperately try to measure the human spirit in many ways. And the interesting thing that comes with that is in some ways, those measures actually become debilitating in the process. I think a turning point for me is one of my adult daughters, Stacey, put me in contact a number of years ago with Simon Sinek's work, and in particular the focus on why, actually going back to understanding why you're actually doing something. In other words, going back to the essence of creating motivation around a common, I mean, in some ways it almost sounds religious. It's like a common belief, a common shared goal, which is a little bit like cultural change. I mean, I've had an opportunity in my career to probably go through and manage probably four major cultural changes where we've brought together people from lots of different groups and tried to create a common culture to be able, for people to be able to gather around. And I think in doing that, you know, you realize, by the way, to me, some of the hardest work that you actually do is cultural change. It's exhausting work. You not only go up to the top of the hill and light the light, you then have to march all the way back down the hill and line everybody up and point them at the light, take them by the
hand. And then you have to worry about the people who are going up with a bucket of water to put out the light because they don't want to partake in the cultural change.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, you know, being I've been connected with the sea since an early childhood of living on lighthouses. And, you know, I think that always brought the analogy to me. It was much like a boat. You've got people in a boat that are on the oars and rowing in the right direction. You've got people on the oars that are just asleep. And then every now and again, you've got someone who's sitting in the bottom of the boat drilling holes in it.
Right.
And you as a leader have to be passionate about the belief that the common goal is to keep the boat afloat. The one thing that is in everybody's interest is for the boat to stay afloat, for the business to stay with its doors open. And so, you know, you find people on the boat whose job it might be to polish the brass, who busily will do that all day. But you go up to them and they're up to their waist in water and you say, look at the words that you're polishing there. It says Titanic. Here's an idea. Grab a bucket and start bailing. And the reason being is that, especially in the larger the group, how you connect people back to the common goal, the common interest that is in all of our interests at the end of the day, and give them a sense of ownership of that.
KPIs and all of these measurements are so difficult to set, right? Because we go into them, like everything, as leaders with good intention, right? We're trying to say, okay, this is how you can show your work. This is how you can prove that you're bringing value to the company. This is how we're going to measure your success in a way that doesn't have a subjective feel to it. But if you are only measuring for the sake of measuring and not measuring something that actually matters and not and matters specifically to your overall goal and your overall vision, you're going to end up with people polishing the nameplates and the brass on the Titanic as it sinks. And they're never going to grab a bucket of water because they don't get recognized for how many buckets they throw. They get recognized for how many letters they polish. And yep. So unless you reflect their measurements, their KPIs, and their incentives on the thing that you're trying to do, you will never, ever have the team doing what you need them to do in the moment you need to do it, unless you as the leader set the parameters, set the rewards, and set the environment for it to happen.
I couldn't agree more. I think, your experience and the work you've done, I think, with exposure, and you will have seen that. But how? Because the temptation is, and this is an interesting point, because it's a technology issue. We can measure so much more now. And I always think, again, fear. When you get to the board level of an organization, they're so fearful that they don't know what's going on underneath the deck plates that they will implement new measures every day. That if HR turns up and says, we've come up with five new ways of measuring everybody, oh, terrific, that's wonderful. But the problem is when it lands at the coalface to the people that are belly to belly with the client, the people that are going to actually determine your success or failure, quite often those KPIs and so forth can become like a prison, focusing the people on the wrong things. So I think this, you know, and I think that, you know, more today, it comes down to the human landing of the technology that we embrace that becomes a big part of it. I mean, you know, I love it. I mean, mind you, if you're going to do personal service these days, unfortunately, there's a large part of the population that will never be able to afford it because it's a very expensive process to do. You know, I mean, you know, the fact that I actually answer my telephone personally, but better than that, when my clients call me, I answer it with knowledge of who they are, what their circumstances are. And we used to have many people in our lives that did that for us. You know, you might have had a family doctor. You might have had a bank manager in years gone by. I haven't seen one of them for an awful long time. And so as we've lost those professionals with knowledge of us in our lives, we've lost the things that we can actually go to. And I think, you know, whenever I'm meeting potential clients, I just say, you will never, ever hear the word, your call is important to us, when you contact us. And if we only had the decency to finish the sentence, but not important enough to employ enough staff to answer the phone. That's the truth of the relationship. But in fairness, it's a product of, and quite correctly, of us saying, I want it cheaper. How do I get this cheap? And the answer is we remove personalization. So you've got personal care from a boss to the people pursuing their success through the success of others and embracing that and believing, for me personally, that my betterment's there. And then that goes through to even the client relationship as well, doesn't it?
One, I truly believe that if you help your team experience the best of what work has to offer, what it could be, right? Not these Monday mornings where we wake up and we are just dreading the day. And the fact that Monday has more heart attacks than any day of the week should be telling for us about what it's like to go to work in this day and age. And I do think that, don't get me wrong, I work from home. So I love being able to connect with someone halfway across the world. And I live all day in this camera environment. But there is something to be said for the isolation and the feeling of not connecting to a human, but connecting to a screen and building a relationship with my computer screen instead of building a relationship with the person. And it takes very intentional work for me to build those relationships. And I have to go out of my way to work twice as hard to build them. And I really think that that effort with my team and with people that I work with translates directly to the way that they deliver for customers. Because if they're happy and fulfilled and they enjoy what they're doing and they know that I believe in them and that they have meaning at work more than just a paycheck and a 9-to-5, that is going to naturally come through whether or not you are actively trying to put it through the screen, right? I had a conversation with someone just a few weeks ago who I've made a bunch of changes in my professional life recently. And he knew me like before those changes were made and after those changes were made. He got on the call and he goes, you just look brighter. You look freer. You look happier. You look, you know, and all of these things. And we've never met in person. We're on the other side of a screen. And yet he could see that because it radiated out. I didn't have to say it. Yeah. And so as our customers, they can feel it too. And even though we can't be as personalized as we would like to be, because it is a premium service now,
it is a
I think we can go out of our way to create the most personalized, depersonalized experience possible.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and you're right. We've all learned new techniques. I mean, you're talking to someone living in Melbourne, Australia, and unfortunately, one of the world records we have is being the most locked down city in the world during COVID. I think we spent about 2 years sitting in our basements.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the mental impact of that I watched on different people and so forth. And the, you know, even for ourselves as a team, when we finally were able to get back into the office, I watched things get solved that we're not getting touched through this particular medium. And as I say, I love the fact that this is available to us. But, you know, we encourage our clients to make the effort to get back in the car and get back to the office to meet face to face. Because for us, it's a very personal service. You're dealing with people's wealth. You're dealing with their financial journey. And that gravitates out to all the emotional issues that affect us as well. I mean, money in many ways is just like fuel on our journey. Yeah. Some of us have good fuel. Some of us have bad fuel. But a lot of it comes down to how you use the fuel to make your life. And that requires, especially amongst couples, you know, if I'm sitting across from a couple, I can actually engage them a lot more effectively because I'm watching the person that's not talking all the time, watching how that impacts on them. So that personal knowledge that you can get is difficult to replicate through this. And, you know, I think people like yourself doing this for a living, you become better and better at being able to work down that small camera and realize that you've got to turn yourself up by 30 or 40% to really have impact, to really drive home a point in this type of environment. So the thing I love about us as human beings is how we adapt. Show us a new environment. We figure it out. The beauty of humans is we're not lineal by nature. We're not simply on a single projection going up or down. We've got choices every day of our lives. Sounds like you've been making some of those choices recently, Alyssa.
I sure have been. And unfortunately, some of those times we wait far too long to make those choices we feel comfortable or we feel fearful, right? That word coming back again of making those choices, even if we know that they're in our best interest, there's still, you know, that modicum of fear there. Especially if it has to do with your livelihood or your finances or anything that has to do with your future. You know, I loved the comment, and I want to just like circle back to it and do like a little mic drop moment. Human beings are not linear. I always tell people we are not uncooked pasta inside of a box you buy at the grocery store. We are cooked pasta. We end up in that strainer. We are a mess. We're all tangled together, and we do not behave in ways that are predictable or linear. If I drop a box of pasta, those things are going to break. If I drop cooked pasta, it's going to go all over my kitchen in every direction. So we have to stop treating our teams like they are linear, like we can understand and predict their every behavior, like they can't adapt and change to the future and make their own decisions. Tim, who, considering the people you know and aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be paying attention to?
I was thinking about that. That was a really interesting question. And as I say, for somebody that maybe it was particularly for me that resonated at the time was the concept of why that Simon Sinek introduced. Well, he didn't introduce it. We all knew why, but he did quite a lot of work around it. And I think many of us have seen his TED Talk and things like that. The reason, by the way, Stacey introduced him to me was that he did a great TED Talk or presentation explaining the millenniums. Now, for somebody like myself, he actually did this talk that actually gave me great insight into another generation to enhance my understanding. So he's certainly somebody that has always stood out to me in his ability to explain things. I think one of the other people is a gentleman by the name of Kevin MacLeod. Kevin MacLeod runs a show on building. It's a UK-based show, but it's meant to be about architecture, about people building their dream home and the dramas that go with it and so forth. But the thing that I've always loved about his approach to life, he made buildings about people. You know, again, he connects to the humanity of it. And I think it's in the humanity that the answers actually lie. It's actually understanding and being interested in people. And I think if those two individuals to me always stood out as carriers of a message which demonstrates the effectiveness of that commitment and what's in it for us as leaders, if you're willing to go searching for it.
And if someone is connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to follow along with your journey or just have a conversation about the future of work, where can they find you online?
Nice, simple. You know, find me on the web under just timtownsend.com. But because I come from Australia, .a.
I will put that in the show notes so our American listeners can go right to it.
I appreciate you. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Tim, for coming on the show today. I loved your perspective. And I, of course, appreciate you getting up at the very early time to come have this conversation with me. Thank you so much. And this episode was really important for people to hear.
Thanks.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.